We're in week three of our series, and today actually marks the halfway point. And we spent the last couple of weeks talking about how this broken way leads to an abundant life if we let it. Last week we talked about living cruciform, what it means to live and to be shaped as people of the cross. Pastor Dan reminded us that broken doesn't mean garbage. That the brokenness of our lives doesn't make us worthless or less valuable in the eyes of God. It doesn't disqualify us from becoming whole. Our lives matter and our brokenness matters. And if we allow God to reshape and reorder our lives, we will experience what it means to have life and to have life abundantly. We can experience wholeness as we allow the Spirit to uncover and bring healing to the fractured areas of our lives. And so this morning we're going to continue with that theme. I want us to look at the brokenness that's been given so that wholeness can be received. Brokenness given, wholeness received. So if you have your Bibles, open them up. If you have your Bible app, scroll to John chapter 20, the Gospel of John. Chapter 20 will be in verse 24. I'll give you a moment to get there. We're going to look at the disciple Thomas. I won't call him by his preferred name, the name we've always given him, Doubting Thomas. Poor guy. Now Thomas, also known as Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." A week later, his disciples were in the house again and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." And we'll end there. Now, before I dig in, I got to be honest. I feel terrible for my man Thomas. Because he had a single moment of his life define him. He had a defining moment of doubt. And instead of giving him the benefit of the doubt, we've labeled him as Doubting Thomas, the one who couldn't believe, the one who was faithless. And that's not entirely fair. Because we never remember him for the really good things that he did. He was a disciple, after all, an apostle. We never celebrate the high points of his life. We don't remember him for his brilliant confession that Jesus is his Lord and his God. Instead, we remember him for his doubt. We get a snapshot of him in his toughest, darkest moment, and that becomes his defining characteristic. What we see right away is that Thomas is at his low point. Thomas is dealing with and sorting through his own kinds of brokenness, his own kinds of confusion. See, he had just lost his friend and his teacher, his rabbi. He has been with Jesus for 3 years. He walked with him and talked with him day in and day out. He had seen all of the miracles and he heard all of the parables. He sat around a table and shared meals with him. He shared laughs with him. And he shed tears with him. And through all of that, he was Jesus' friend. He was Jesus' friend. More than that, though, he was his disciple. And he believed certain things about Jesus. He believed Jesus was the promised Messiah. He believed Jesus was the king that Israel was expecting and longing for. He believed that Jesus was the one who was going to save Israel. See, Thomas experienced all of the highs of what it meant to follow Jesus. And now he's sorting through the intense lows of life without him. Thomas was dealing with the pain of physical loss. But he wasn't just dealing with the pain of physical loss. Thomas was facing the grief of disappointment and shattered expectations. See, Thomas had an idea about what the future would look like with Jesus as king. Thomas lived with this ongoing vision of what it would look like for God to be in complete control and for Thomas to be by his side as Jesus would be enthroned in Israel for now and hopefully forever. He had beliefs, dreams, ideas. But now Jesus is dead. He was publicly tortured and humiliated. He was hung on a cross, crucified. He was put to death by the powers of Rome and the Jewish leaders. And if that wasn't enough for the young disciple to process, if it wasn't enough to lose his friend and his teacher, if it wasn't enough to have his expectations shattered one afternoon, now he has to hear that Jesus isn't even really dead because Jesus has shown up and Thomas has missed out. See, the 10 were gathered. The 10 disciples were gathered and Jesus appears to them and says, look, look at my body, look at my wounds, look at my scars, look at the nail-pierced hands and feet. But Thomas wasn't there. And Thomas finds himself on the outside looking in. Thomas hears that while he was gone, his friends got to encounter and experience this resurrected, fully alive Jesus. And in a moment, those 10 disciples had all of their fears, had all of their doubts, had all of their questions answered while Thomas was on the outside looking in, looking for those very same answers. But he wasn't there. And he didn't get them. And so it's natural that he would have a little bit of doubt. Thomas missed seeing Jesus' resurrected body with his own eyes. He missed being able to touch the pierced hands and feet. Everyone else was there. The other 10 were there. They saw him for himself. The scars, the holes, the resurrected body. The disciples got to see it and Thomas didn't. And so naturally now, Thomas wants the same experience. He wants to see Jesus just like they did. Thomas doesn't believe that a dead man can live, not after torture and public humiliation, not after the cross, not after such a brutal, violent display of Roman power. Thomas doesn't see it. He doesn't get the benefit of the doubt that the other 10 got, and so he's stuck in his unbelief. He doesn't see it, and so he doesn't believe it. See, Thomas knows the power of the cross. But what he doesn't know yet is the power of the resurrection. He understands the power of the cross to break bodies and to bring death. But what he doesn't understand yet is the power of that very same cross that brings life and brings wholeness because he wasn't in the room to experience it himself. And so he has to sit and wait and think about all of these things in the middle of all of his pain, all of his disappointment, all of his loss. Thomas wants to see the scars of Jesus' brokenness, to see, to touch, to know, to experience his wounds. He wants Jesus' broken body to serve as a kind of sign, a sign that death doesn't hold the ultimate power, that suffering and woundedness and disappointment and perceived failures, that all of those things aren't really fatal. They might be crushing, but they aren't fatal. He wants to know that there can be hope on the other side of everything he's experiencing. Thomas is no different than we are. Thomas is no different. Thomas doesn't merely doubt that Jesus is alive. Thomas doubts that what is lost what is broken can and will be fully restored, fully redeemed, fully made right. He wants to know in a personal, tangible, concrete way that the brokenness of Jesus really can bring some kind of wholeness. He's heard it from his friends, but he doesn't see it and he doesn't believe it for himself. So Thomas is looking for a moment, the same moment the other 10 got. A moment where he can truly believe that the creator and sustainer of life is also the destroyer of death. He's looking for the moment where the creator and sustainer of life also becomes the destroyer of death. He's looking for that moment. He's looking for something tangible to hold on to, something to believe in, something to cling to in the middle of his disappointment, in the middle of his shattered expectations, in the middle of his grief and his questions and his doubts and his fears and anxieties and uncertainty. He's looking for a moment he can hold on to. He's looking for a new revelation of Jesus. He's known him as the crucified Messiah, but he hasn't experienced him yet as resurrected Savior. See, the paradox of our faith is that there's life in death. There is living in dying. This entire series is built around the truth that the broken way really can lead to an abundant life, but it's hard, and there's a tension we have to live in, and it's probably going to cost us something. And listen, if you haven't come face to face with the resurrected Christ, the one who has been pierced and broken, the one who has suffered and was crucified but is now alive, then it's hard to believe that there's a redemptive purpose for your suffering. If you haven't come face to face with the resurrected Jesus, it's hard to believe that there's something on the other side of death, on the other side of what feels like hopelessness. If you haven't come into contact with the one who is dead but now lives, it's really, really hard to see some kind of purpose in your pain. It's hard to see a redemptive purpose for the grief, the death. Whatever it is that you are experiencing here in this moment, right now in your own life. Thomas is familiar with death. He's a human being. But what he's looking for is life. It's the same thing we're looking for today. We really want to know. That's why we gather here together. We really want to know that the pierced and broken one makes all things whole. We want to know that the pierced and broken one, the one we celebrate at this communion table, really is the one who will make all things right, make all things new, make all things whole. Thomas is looking for a moment where he can experience that for himself. Where he can see the resurrected body. The one that still holds the scars and the wounds and the marks of his suffering and brokenness, but who has emerged as fully alive on the other side of it. He needs to know that there's a power stronger than death, a power at work that is more potent than the grave. So of course, Thomas wants to see Jesus alive for himself. And if we look closely and pay attention to the story, Thomas's story isn't about doubt, but development. Because we know Thomas ends up speaking to his doubt in a really powerful way. He declares to Jesus, "My Lord and my God." Once skeptical, trying to balance what it means to live in faith and to live in doubt, what it means to be broken but look forward to wholeness. As he balances that all out, he comes to announce that Jesus really is who he says he is. By calling him Lord and God, Thomas is saying that Jesus is the resurrected Son of God who has overcome death. See, doubt doesn't leave him stuck in the place of his brokenness. He allows it to develop and to transform his view of not only himself or the world, but his view of God. In one statement, he acknowledges Jesus' lordship, not only over his own life, not only over the power of the cross or the power of Rome or whatever world power holds the authority at the time. But he confesses that Jesus is Lord over everything, over everyone, the living and the dead. Thomas's statement is bold, and it's really more of a confession. He acknowledges what has always been true, but what he's sometimes struggled to believe. He acknowledges, he declares that God is in complete control in the person of Jesus, that Jesus has absorbed all of the experiences of Thomas's life, all of the pleasure, all of the highs, all of the good things that Thomas has experienced, particularly in his friendship with Jesus. But Thomas also now knows that Jesus is familiar with pain and suffering. Jesus is familiar with rejection. He knows what it's like to be despised. And now Thomas can put his trust in a God who not only brings life, but who overcomes death. That's what Thomas was looking for. And when he sees Jesus for himself, he believes. And he confesses, "My Lord and my God." Thomas allowed his doubt to develop into trust. His doubts served as a catalyst to experience the resurrected Christ, to look at his nail-pierced hands and feet and to believe. And in a moment, he saw and understood what Jesus' scars really meant. The same pierced body that once broke Thomas' hopes and expectations is now the same pierced body that makes all things new and all things whole. It now brings him to a place where he can not only believe in Jesus, but he can follow Jesus as a disciple, as an apostle, as one who moves with power in the early church. But he needed a moment where he knew without a doubt that Jesus has overcome death, and in doing so brings redemption and wholeness and peace and joy and comfort to whatever it is that Thomas is going to walk through in his life. The scars, they testify to God's faithfulness on Jesus' body. And as a result, Thomas is able to look and see and know and understand that just as God was faithful to Jesus to the point where he brought him back from the dead, God was going to be faithful to Thomas as well in the midst of his brokenness or uncertainty. See, God is big enough to hold your faith and your doubt. Doubt didn't disqualify Thomas from coming face to face with Jesus. And your doubt doesn't disqualify you from experiencing his presence and his power in your own life. Your brokenness doesn't keep you from experiencing the power of resurrection life. In fact, it gives space for you to encounter it and experience it for yourself. Firsthand, faith and doubt are not mutually exclusive. Brokenness and wholeness are not mutually exclusive. That's what the broken way is all about. They're not mutually exclusive, but they give space and allow for transformative moments with Jesus, where you can discover who he really is and what he's really like, and the healing that's there and the wholeness that's there if we allow ourselves to come into contact with the one who was pierced and broken so that you could have wholeness again. Faith and doubt, brokenness and wholeness, life and death, they coexist. They are all equal and important parts of this journey into abundant life. They are necessary steps that we must take along the broken way. Jesus is familiar with that broken way. And Thomas was looking for a moment where he could come face to face with Jesus' brokenness and find that the broken way really does lead to life and life abundantly. And Jesus, I think Jesus is really gentle with Thomas when he shows up into the room and in the middle of Thomas's chaos pronounces peace. I think he's really empathetic with what Thomas is going through and experiencing. Because Jesus doesn't walk away from Thomas, but Jesus steps into the room and shows Thomas his scars. Jesus doesn't hide his scars from Thomas. Jesus doesn't hide his body from Thomas. Instead, he says, come, look, see, and touch. The pierced hands and feet, the pierced side are marks of his suffering, his pain, and his grief. But that brokenness is now mended in resurrection life. His brokenness becomes healing. His broken body is wholeness. His death is a demonstration of his love. And his resurrection is the power of God at work, telling us that what is broken within us and around us will be redeemed so long as we place it in the hands of the God who not only creates and sustains life, but who destroys death. His scars, Jesus' scars, like our scars, are not meant to be hidden or covered up. Instead, they are to serve as visible signs of the healing, the redemption, the life, the purpose that can be experienced on the other side of the things that wound us and break us. Our scars, like Jesus' scars, can be used to bring comfort, to bring peace, to help bring a renewed trust or confidence to the Thomases in our own lives. Because there's people all around us who really want to know that what they are going through isn't being experienced in vain. People want to know that there is a redemptive purpose for the things that they are walking through and going through, from the challenges that they face on the day to day. People want to know that there's something that goes beyond just the anxieties or the depressions or the confusion that they face. They want to know there's something beyond the broken relationships and the broken marriages. They want to know that there's a hope that goes beyond death. They want to know that there's a God who lives because he has overcome the grave. They want to hold on to that kind of hope. And so our scars can be used for the Thomases in our own lives. Jesus doesn't hide his scars from Thomas. He openly points to them as a demonstration of God's faithfulness. And in it declares that the one who has died now lives, and now you can live too. The one who has died now lives, and now you can live too. Human wisdom says to remove yourself from pain and grief, to keep yourself distant from the brokenness of this world. The wisdom of the world says, stay far away from the things that make you uncomfortable. Why would you want that? Why would you want to even think about embracing that? It's so much easier to live for yourself, to get your slice of the pie. But the wisdom of God says, embrace the broken way, because as you do, you're going to find that there's not only life, but life abundantly. The wisdom of God says, don't reject the broken way, embrace it. Because on the other side of everything you're experiencing, there's a redemptive purpose at play. Embrace the things that feel like they're going to break you, because I'm going to turn around and use that as your breakthrough. I'm going to allow the things in your life to be a signpost that points to me. I'm going to allow the things that feel like they are crushing you, pressing you, breaking you. I'm going to allow those things in your life, those things that you are experiencing, to become whole. Not so you can boast about it, but so that through the redemptive purposes of God in your life, they will come into contact with the pierced and broken one who makes all things whole and makes all things new. There's a purpose. God is working things for your good, even if it doesn't feel like it. The wounds that you carry will heal. And some of those healed up wounds will remain as scars, not to be hidden, not to be covered up in shame, but to be used as a testimony, to be used as a sign that God is intimately involved, even in your suffering, even in your pain, even in your sorrow, even in your confusion, even, like Thomas, in your doubt. We find our brokenness and our wholeness in the brokenness and wholeness of Jesus. It sounds silly, but it's the basis, it's the foundation for everything we believe. It's the basis and foundation for the study, the broken way. That somehow, some way, Jesus' brokenness leads to our wholeness. Our life in his death. Our death in his life. And there's no better place to celebrate that. There's no better place to remember that than here at the table, where we remember the sacrifice of the cross. Jesus' embracing of the broken way. Not to the end of death forever, but for the purpose to display resurrection life and power. The communion table is where we celebrate. The communion table is where we celebrate God's giving of himself. The bread given away as a representation of Jesus' broken body, and the wine, the juice, given away as a representation of Jesus' shed blood. And we quickly get a picture of Christ's broken body given to you and given to me and given to us, so that there can be wholeness and healing. This picture extends to the shed blood, those pierced hands and feet, the pierced side, where Christ's life is given away so that we might live, so that we might have life and life abundant. His brokenness and death lead to wholeness and life. That's what we celebrate. That's what we remember. Brokenness given, wholeness received. If the worship team would come back, if those who are serving communion would prepare themselves. We practice an open communion here, which just means that if you want the bread and the juice, if you want those symbols of the broken body and the shed blood, I encourage you to take them and to participate, to take, to eat, to drink, to remember the brokenness of Jesus for your wholeness. I invite you to come and to see how God gives himself so that you can experience wholeness of life. I invite you, come, taste, and see how brokenness is given and how wholeness is received. I invite you to come to the table. I invite you to come. Because this is the table, not of the church, but of the Lord. It is made ready for those who love him and who want to love him more. So come. You who have much faith and you who have little. You who have been here often and you who have not been here long. You who have tried to follow, and you who have failed, come, because it is the Lord who invites you to remember how brokenness is given and wholeness is received.